You guys ready? There we go. Good evening and welcome to the November 6th regular meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session and we discussed negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Yes, Mrs. Roger.
Before we do, am I on?
Yes.
Okay. Before we get started tonight, I just wanted to mention that we will not have and we will miss the input and companionship of our colleague Walter Millar, who is not able to be with us tonight because he is on his honeymoon in Tahiti. And Bora Bora. So I know that my fellow board members join me in wishing Walter and Kathy all the best, and we look forward to seeing him.
October 22nd and October 30th. So would someone like to make a motion on accepting those minutes?
I'll move the approval of all three.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mrs. Roger. Any discussion? Okay. See. Okay, Mrs. Dickinson.
Just a real quick one on page 2 of the regular meeting. It says, Mrs. Dickinson proposed the following addition to the discussion on curriculum standards. And then here's the addition. Dr. Matakovich explained that the California Department of Education indicated adopted standards are not expected to be revised until the subsequent review cycle. The minutes of October 2nd, 2007 were approved as revised. Well, this didn't seem to be what I remembered, and I called, emailed Dr. Matakovich and also Mrs. Holmes, and it really should say, Dr. Matakovich explained that the California Department of Education indicated adopted standards are not expected to be revised, period.
Dr. Matakovich is, okay.
Which is quite different.
Are not expected to, okay. Mrs. Holmes?
The difficulty is that we're two meetings past, so I can make that correction, which we'll read into tonight's minutes, reflecting upon the minutes of October 16th. But I can't go further back and change the minutes of October 2nd.
I think that's okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I accept the amendment.
So we haven't accept. Mr. Buckman accepts the amendment. Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Okay. Any other comments? All in favor? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to presentations. And we have the Teach Foundation Fall Annual Grant Awards. Terry Main and Marlene Peter. Marlene Peter, that's a strange name.
Good evening, board members. My name is Terry Main, and Marlene and I are both members of the Teach Grant Committee, and it's our pleasure to be here tonight to present you to you the Fall 2007 Teach Grant recipients. This fall, we received 22 grant applications representing 17 schools in the district. One, a little bit about their grant request. Recipients, if you would please stand when I call your name and come up on front. Marlene will actually present you with your award envelope. And if you could remain here until we're all done, then we can give you all the big round of applause that you deserve. Okay, so. Or, sure, you can come and sit and then we'll all stand. We're friendly. Our first recipient this year is Daniel Freeman, who I understand could not be with us tonight, so we have an honorable stand-in. Principal. Mr. Freeman was awarded $1,000 to purchase a video camera and microphone and additional equipment to help his English students with the development of important speaking and presentation skills. Also from Morro Bay High School, we have Linda Todd. Linda is an agriculture teacher who is responsible for the ROP Nursery Greenhouse Management and Floral Design class. Her grant of $1,000 will allow flowers to be purchased for class projects. These beautiful student arrangements are used at various school events and are even sold as fundraisers to raise additional money for the program. Pacific Beach High School, again, was the beneficiary of a number of grants. The first is an award of $1,000 to Lene Coyner. This grant is going to be used to purchase a camera and scanner to facilitate students being able to produce a completely digital yearbook. Next is a grant for $696 that is awarded to Cherry Jacobson of Pacific Beach. This project is called Enhancing the Art Experience, and these funds will allow students to work with a local artist on a creative fine arts project, and students will be able to acquire new painting, drawing, and sculpting skills. Also from Pacific Beach, we have Daniel Kirk. Daniel was awarded $480 to support an ongoing project called Enhancing the Drama Experience. These funds allow drama students to attend a performance at PCPA as part of their study of theatrical productions. Our next recipient is Melissa Newman. Also of Pacific Beach, who is back again coaching another team of students through the county mock trial program. The award of $1,000 will pay for the entry fee as well as transportation to scrimmages against other schools as the participants prepare for competition in February. Next, we move to San Luis Obispo High School. Our first recipient is Anna Bates. Mark is a science teacher who requested funds to allow his marine biology students to make a field trip to local coastal areas to study marine organisms in their natural settings. Teacher awarded Mark $471 for transportation costs. Our next recipient at SLO High School is mathematics teacher Dave Melton. Okay, well, Dave applied for a grant to purchase a smart board, which will be used with various software applications to, in an effort to use technology to help students better see and grasp mathematics. Now we move to Laguna Middle School and U.S. history teacher Eva DeSanto. Eva was awarded $558 to purchase a subscription to the magazine Current Events for her students. Her goal is to help students make the connection between the past and the present. Also at Laguna Middle School is science teacher Holly Naylor. Holly submitted a grant to provide funds for the establishment of a science club that would provide enrichment experiences for students and to foster excitement for science. Teacher awarded $500 for travel and materials for the science club. Next, we move to Los Osos Middle School and science teacher Diana Barnhart. Diana was awarded $350 for materials to support the 8th grade engineering day. This all-day event provides students the opportunity to explore different engineering fields through a series of different rotations. Now we move on to the elementary schools. Our next recipient is Wendy Craig from Baywood Elementary. Wendy wrote a grant to allow the purchase of a number of PC-to-TV converters so that classroom computers could be connected to the classroom televisions, which would allow viewing of web-based instructional materials that are subscribed to by the district. Baywood was awarded $1,000 for the purchase of 7 cables. Our next award goes to Kylie McLeod of Bishop Peak for her Lights, Camera, Action, and Learn project. The goal of Cindy's project is to expose students to the genre of poetry through lessons taught by a professional poet through the California Poets in the Schools. Teach awarded $840 for this project. And our last grant recipient is Russ Rayburn, a fourth grade teacher at Monarch Grove. Mr. Rayburn has been instrumental in the success of the Monarch Grove Elementary School Native Plant Garden, which actually began 3 years ago with a seed grant from the Teach Foundation. So Teach is proud to provide $950 in funding for materials to keep his hands-on project in a success. Yes. So there you have.
They need to know there's not a check in here.
Yes, there is actually not a check in the envelope. We have presented a check to Kim, and you need to requisition the funds from the district for your actual projects. Sorry, one extra little paperwork step there. So congratulations to all this.
So the check is not in the mail. The check is with Mrs. Holmes. On behalf of the Board of Trustees, we want to thank the Teach Foundation for their support of our schools and our teachers. I would just remind everybody that's listening that the Teach Foundation has a telethon where they raise several thousand dollars, usually at the end of February or the beginning of March, the first weekend in March. Ms. Gould is back there pointing these things out to me. And actually, our friends at AGP Video televise it, and we thank AGP Video as well. So feel free to donate money to the Teach Foundation. It goes straight to the kids. It's a great thing, and so thank you all, and thanks for the support. Let's move on to correspondence. The board did receive one piece of correspondence from Charlie Perry S., and we want to thank Charlie for writing to us about actually thanking Mr. Spadafore for his continued communication with teachers and other staff members. Moving on to public comment, is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on any issue this evening? Any issue relating to school district business? Okay.
The exit exam took place yesterday and also today for the juniors and seniors. We will be taking our senior panoramic picture on Wednesday the 14th. We conducted the Healthy Kids Survey to the sophomores, I believe, on health issues. The principals forum takes place this month. Citizens and parents will come to speak to our principal. Our school play takes place this month. We're very excited about that. December 11th and 12th will be the Morro Bay High School Band and Choir concert located at the Cohen Center, or the PAC Center. We invite everyone to attend. Also, Music Boosters are doing their Christmas tree and poinsettia sales. They have a couple of different types of trees. They're really beautiful, and if anyone is interested, you can contact Morro Bay High. Moving into fall sports, 4 out of 5 of our returning sports teams went to CIF, and the girls' golf only missed by one stroke. So it was really close. Girls' tennis took 3rd in league and is going to CIF. Girls' volleyball tied for 2nd but lost the coin toss and is going as 3rd place. The boys' cross-country won the local county championship and took 2nd in league. Girls' cross-country took 5th in the county championship and also took 2nd in league. Their next big event for both the boys and girls is at the Mount Sac prelim race. And for our football team, certainly not least, is still undefeated. The Morro Bay Pirates are ranked number 1 in our division, and I believe we're 3rd in the state in our division. Our last league game will be Friday night against the San Ynez Pirates, against the real home of the Pirates, which is Morro Bay High School. We stress our invitation to this particular game. We need as much support as possible, and the game is sure to be a good one. In closing, Morro Bay High would like to thank the board and the community for all their support. And from everyone at Morro Bay High, we wish you all a safe and eventful holiday season. Thank you.
I wonder about the Healthy Kids Survey. We did something like that at Royal Grande High School, too. And the teachers, too, fill out something about, I don't know if it's called the Healthy Teachers Survey or Healthy Schools. But do you think that kind of gives you a thinking of yourself as a healthy kid? You're a healthy kid, or you wouldn't be filling out the Healthy Kids Survey. Does that help you kind of skew your answers in a positive way? Or
the choir concert on the 11th and 12th.
I'm actually not sure. Okay. I'm sure it is one and the other, but I'll definitely let you know in the next meeting.
Yeah,
which will be before that, because they're not told.
And then I think Mr. Zotovich, helped me out if I get this wrong, but people can contact Morro Bay High School for tickets, or do they contact the PAC for tickets to the band or choir performances?
Pete Zotovich, Morro Bay High School. We wanted to give you a pre-show of what was going to happen in December, if you were going to prepare, you could put those dates aside. Choir's on the 11th and band's on the 12th, and yes, you can contact Morro Bay High School. And we have plenty of tickets for you.
So you said choir the 11th and band the 12th?
That's correct.
Okay, great. And also, I know that my wife and I have always bought our Christmas trees from the music boosters, and we've always had beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Christmas trees. How could somebody purchase Christmas trees if they'd like to do that? Sorry, Mr. Zotovich, I'm making you take your 10,000 steps.
Poinsettia sales are done on the 16th. And so if you're interested, you can call the high school and talk with Mrs. Varney, and she'll set that up. And if you're interested in a Christmas tree, and I bought them for the last 2 years, they're absolutely fabulous. You can also talk to Mrs. Varney, and she can take care of that also for you. Okay.
And Mrs. Roger was just asking, the football game will be at Morro Bay High School, right?
It's a home football game Friday night.
7:30?
Yes. 7:30.
Okay, great.
We welcome everybody in the community.
Excellent. It should be a great game. Thanks,
should
Mr. Zotovich.
Thank you.
Are there any other district representatives or school staff who would like to make a report to the board this evening? Okay. Let's move on then to Mr. Miller. Would you like to talk to us about the state budget?
Well, I'm not sure I'd like to talk to you about it. I wish there was going to be a day that we could talk about some good news coming out of the state. But today in the news reports, the state's budget crisis is deepening. The governor has made a call that for the 08-09 budget, he would like each department associated with state government to present a 10% reduced budget in 08-09 over 07-08. This represents a fairly deep cut and an indication of how far the structural deficit in the current budget has worsened. The current budget had a structural deficit of $6 billion when passed. It's estimated to grow to $10 billion by the end. That hasn't happened. They've had to pay back money that they withheld from STRS, the State Teacher Retirement System, $500 million. Things have mounted on top of itself to the point where the governor is left with very little choice but to ask for reductions in department state budgets. The problem for education is that when this happens, there has been a history that the revenue limits that are paid to school districts on the basis of their attendance of kids or a per student allocation has been deficited. And in some of our bad budget years of the mid-90s, the deficit had reached 11%, almost 11%, 10.5%, absolutely. And that's on a year-over-year basis. And it represents a trend that for our district could result in a like pain that they will place on us where our categorical programs are cut. Because, as you know, that's the only area that we receive state funding. So if, in fact, the education community is asked to forgive its protection or to release its protection under Prop 98 and allow the state to deficit its revenue limits, we may find ourselves looking at some cuts within our own budget, even though we don't have a revenue limit per se from the state of California. I think that the education community has received indications that the administration would consider asking us for that, and it's something we need to be very cognizant of as we go through our budget projections for next year and what we're looking at over the next 3 or 4 months. We have to pay particular attention to this. The other factor on this is that it has implications on Wall Street, that our credit rating as a state will deteriorate, and the cost to finance building projects and other type loans that Wall Street handles for the education community will become more expensive. The other aspect of the economy is the subprime mortgage interest crisis that's deepening on a daily basis, with major financial houses writing down loans of $11 billion and $7 billion and $5 billion. Citibank, Merrill Lynch, Bank of America have all taken the available. Then we also may see a double hit, not only in our property taxes, but also within our categorical programs. So it's a time of concern for all, and nobody's immune to the economic issues that are confronting not only the state of California, but the federal government. And as always happens, it trickles down to the local level. So we have those issues opening up in front of us.
Question? Yeah. Have we faced that situation before where the states decided to spread the pain of the deficits across basic aid districts and
yes,
pulling back in categorical? When was that last?
That was about 3 years ago,
okay.
Maybe 4 years ago. We gave up. It was a diminishing amount, but I think the initial hit for San Luis Coastal was we gave about $110,000 worth of categorical money, and then it diminished to about $80,000 and then $60,000, and those numbers are rough.
How do they determine that allocation? And do revenue limit districts also suffer reductions in categorical as well?
Potentially, but what the calculation is that there is the ability to determine what the revenue limit hit, if you will, on us ought to have been. And that then is translated into categorical dollars. And in terms of revenue limit districts, the pain is probably doubly felt.
Sure.
Because Prop 98 is a guarantee that encompasses all educational spending, not only just revenue limit, but categorical also. So when they ask for the permission, okay, now one time they just suspended Prop 98. It was actually with the education community's permission, but it turned out to be under false conditions by the governor that it was done. He never kept his side of the bargain, which was to restore the cuts. It took a court case to be able to do that, and we eventually will get it repaid to us over a long period of time. But ultimately, I think that lesson has sunk in with the education community not to suspend Prop 98. It's a constitutional guarantee. We're not about to give up our protections again, but we will give up a deficit factor, which is just a borrowing, if you will, and it has a payback to it. So it keeps Prop 98 intact. They must pay it back, and eventually it'll come. Huge debates, I'm sure, are going to arise about what,
because of the housing market that has already been into a downfall and may go for another 18 months. Two places.
For the first time in a number of years, you know, the last time being the categorical like pain that we suffered, but for the first time in a long time, the housing market itself has, as it always does, goes through cycles. And as it slows down and abates its growth, then we have to be prepared. And that's just part of what we do. We don't want to go through a period of denial where we're not willing to accept what is facing us in terms of diminishing revenues. We are not in a crisis situation. We don't know that anything bad is going to happen, but we certainly want to surface it, think about it, and address what our potential actions might be.
But is it true that the continuing effect of this, even though it may be 1 year or 2 years, goes on for several years? If the state doesn't make up what has been lost, say,
oh, sure,
in categorical funds, or the market doesn't pick up relative to housing for 2 years. When you look at planning, it can affect a district like ours for several years.
These things aren't one-year anomalies. These are multi-year trends that develop. And in the early mid-90s, we had severe downturns, and just 3 or 4 years ago, we had another more shallow downturn. But they're structural deficits of the state budget. It's the spending patterns that the state builds into its budget that is causing the overall shortage. And then you couple that with an economy that's in transition. Okay, it's definitely not growing right now, but I don't know that it's absolutely crashing. The stock market isn't going downward. So it's just something to be aware of, and we need to address it and measure its progress or how it's going to affect us over the next 3 or 4 months. But this is a time of uncertainty for all schools and all school districts, and we just need to be aware of that.
Chris? Russell, in recent history, at least in my recent memory, when we went through one of these ones before, we actually experienced mid-year cuts.
Yeah.
Is there any talk at this point?
No. There was a question given to the Department of Finance, represented once. And so having a cut after you've already spent the money, it defies logic, I think. And I think that most people got that. So to think that we're going to suffer mid-year cuts, I think, is not a realistic expectation at this time. But who knows what the politicians will come up with in the next couple of months.
Have we seen many foreclosures in houses within the district boundaries?
Within our district boundaries, our foreclosures are not as great as neighboring areas, nor have the requests for reassessment of property taxes. So there's a mechanism whereby a homeowner who believes that his house has declined in value can ask for a reassessment of property taxes. And there are literally thousands of those reassessment requests in Santa Barbara County. And we have not seen nearly the level from the county auditor's office, nearly the level that Santa Barbara has had.
And another question for you. Do we expect to see any revaluation of Diablo based on the upgrades that they're in the process of constructing right now and future upgrades?
And the short answer to that is yes, there will be some upward evaluation of the property value of Diablo. That was clear when the plans were presented and approved for the turbines that were delivered yesterday and will be installed in the next several years. But it won't happen until they're operational and become a functioning unit of the power plant.
I don't think anybody was, except for Dr. Valentine, and maybe Russell was in the room when this happened, but the last really serious budget crunch we had, when there was the threat of taking away the community-funded status of districts such as ours, the deal with the devil we made was to lose $120 per student that we got as what was then called a basic aid school district, which we no longer get. That was one of the deals that we had to make. And I clearly remember the mid-year budget cuts. It was right about CSBA time, I think about 2003, something like that. And it was very painful to everybody, lots and lots of concern. So.
The one scenario which we haven't addressed is that scenario that was surfaced at that time, which was to remove the status of basic aid to maintain our basic aid status.
Right. And I remember there were hundreds of thousands of responses to the legislature in protest of that potential move of toward the community-based, community-supported school districts such as ours. Any other questions from board members? Okay. Seeing none, then let's move on to item number 3, Dr. Crocker. Actually, Dr. Valentine and then Dr. Crocker. I'm sorry. No, come on up, Julian. I'm sorry.
My job is simply to welcome Dr. Crocker to our board meeting. We have the pleasure of having our colleagues from the county share with us each year. And Dr. Crocker, welcome to our meeting.
Thank you. It's good to be back again. I'll be relatively brief. Again, this is my annual visit. I try to do this with all of our boards and our districts around the county. You have my usual information before you. Again, you probably have had this before. This is the annual education report. Comes out every year in February. We will be doing another round of this February. Excuse me. And then the quick fingertip facts there for your information. Just very quickly, to remind you that the county office essentially has three types of functions. We have a series of mandated functions that is required by law for county offices to provide for districts. Just a couple that you know about: our fiscal oversight, communicate every year with you about your budget, our staff reviews your first and second interim reports, and your collective bargaining agreements. Another area is credentialing. We have to assure that teachers throughout the county are properly credentialed, as well as teaching in the subject areas that they're credentialed in. Then we have a series of services that we do that are really on demand from districts, although sometimes I think people don't quite realize that. But for example, our services to moderate and severely handicapped special education students, our services to alternative education students, and most of the staff development that we do are really on request from our clients that we consider the 10 school districts. I would say, as you're well aware, we're in the midst of a transfer of programs in terms of special education. From my perspective, I think that's going very well. It is a complex matter, but I'm very optimistic that it will go quite well. Members of your staff have been very, very, I think, forthcoming and extremely helpful in terms of the initial issues, which are staff, potential staff moves and transfers. So certainly your human resource department, as well as just quick examples, for example, the Grizzly Charter School that we operate in conjunction with the National Guard. Dr. Valentine sits on the charter school board, is an example. Our effort in the early childhood area is, again, one that we choose to be involved with. It's not required necessarily. We run the vast majority of the state preschools and child development programs around the county. So that's kind of a quick overview, just to refresh your mind about what we do. I thought I'd just a couple of comments more relevant to what's happening right now. On Thursday of this week, there should be, hopefully locally, certainly statewide, there'll be a lot of publicity about another set of reports that are coming out. This particular one deals with preschool within the state. The RAND Corporation will release the first of four studies that they are doing aimed specifically at California. The first two will be announced on Friday, on Thursday, excuse me, the results of that. The first one's no kind of revelation necessarily, but it again confirms the issue of the achievement gap exists in students when they enter kindergarten. It didn't suddenly happen in third grade or by the time they get to high school. So the efforts again to say that quality preschool is an extremely effective strategy to close that gap early, much earlier than we do. So the RAND study will speak to that issue and again confirm that, again using California data. The second one, to my mind, is much more sort of interesting and is kind of new work, and where they are attempting to look at the resources throughout the state that are dedicated to early childhood education generally, and are those dollars really targeted toward promoting quality? And initially, of course, people say, well, of course it is. That's the way we are. But, for example, the programs that are examined are basically publicly funded programs only. So there's no attempt to look at the issues of non-public provision for early childhood. But within the public-funded arena, things like state preschool, Head Start, child development programs, and the parent voucher program that is essentially run through the Department of Social Services usually, and this is money that is given to certain income levels of families to then spend for child care or earlier education. So if you take all of that money together, it's a couple of billion dollars, which is a lot. You don't think of that amount of money coming to early childhood. So the point of this is saying, if we're really interested in looking at the resources behind young children, birth to age five, we need to be aware of and may have people attending is the State Superintendent's Achievement Gap Summit that'll be in Sacramento Tuesday and Wednesday. I'm going, several other I think representatives around the county are going. And this is the state superintendent's leadership, I think, to sort of show examples of successful practices around the state that really are making a difference with the achievement gap. And we hear many times that, you know, we're not making a lot of progress, this gap still exists, and that certainly is all true. I think it sometimes understates the tremendous progress really the state has made in this whole standards-based reform effort, and outstanding examples of many places in very difficult circumstances that really are making a difference. So for me, it reinforces what I've come to believe is that within the profession, we really know what to do. It's not a matter of doing another study to find out. It's more implementing and either having the resources or the will or whatever is necessary in order to really put into effect what we really know does work. So that'll be Tuesday and Wednesday in Sacramento, and probably be a fair amount of publicity about that one, too. So that's all of my remarks. Be glad to respond to any questions that you may have.
And I think this Friday you're speaking down in Santa Barbara for the Tri-County Zed Coalition.
Right.
Would you like to talk about that for just a moment?
I think I just said what I'm going to say. Right. I think most of you know, because Coastal has been a very active member of Tri-County's Education Coalition. It's a little bit unique around the state in the sense that it's a combination of both administration, elected officials, as well as the employee associations and the public that come together around educational efforts. Bill Cerrone, County Superintendent of Santa Barbara, and myself are going to be two of the presenters. And I think we will be talking about some of the issues that I did refer to, which is if this is the year of education, it's interesting hearing Russell's report of from the governor exactly what are some of the initiatives that may be being put forward primarily from the administration. So those would be the kinds of things we're talking about. I would say as a precursor, the governor, the administration, any governor is in a very difficult position now because it's hard to have initiatives that don't cost anything. And given the financial situation, I think he'll be hard-pressed to really come up with something that will be substantive and at the same time be able to fit within the financial parameters. So I think what we'll see are things that are maybe already in existence. This California school financing system like, the underlying question was, are we adequately funding our schools in order to meet the relatively high expectations we have? Whole series of studies that have been completed, been reported on, didn't settle anything. I think from my perspective, again, it's not an either-or situation of saying, well, we need more money, but we don't need to do anything differently. On the other hand, people saying, you've got plenty of money, just use what you've got better. It's not either one. We have to continue to improve, but any way you look at it, we're about $1,000 per student under the national average. So none of those studies said we have plenty of money. They were somewhat circumspect about exactly how much more should be there.
And that's going to be, I believe, Friday at 10 o'clock at the Goleta School District.
Right. Invite everyone
Fairview
to come.
Fairview Avenue, I believe, across from the Goleta Public Library. And everybody that's watching, if you see this before that, you're welcome to come. And so we would invite everybody to come down and hear Dr. Crocker and Bill Cerrone talk about those things. Thank you, Dr. Crocker.
Sure. Any other
questions from board members? Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item number 4, the Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program waiver request. And this is a public hearing. Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, it's my pleasure to introduce Jim Souza tonight, who's back by popular demand. And we'll explain something that I think is basically good news for ROP.
Well, just to give you a quick background, in the 2005-2006 school year, Los Angeles Unified ROP did not report their adult enrollment for funding. And that led to about a $12 million windfall of income or of revenue statewide that ROP shared in. And the Santa Lucia ROP shared in about $400,000 of that funding. Because of that, well, coupled with that, we were advised by the State Department of Education not to spend any of the money until July of 2007. A year later. So we just recently were told back in July of 07 that we could start spending the money. And because of that, we exceed our 15% maximum carryover of funds for 07-08. So we have to apply for a waiver with the State Department. And because we're a JPA and you're one of the member districts of that JPA, your board has to approve the San Lucia ROP waiver, which hopefully will, you know, was out of our control as to how we encountered this money and how we could spend it. So if there are any questions, I can answer them.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and open this public hearing for the Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program waiver request. Is there anybody that would like to address the board on this subject? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close this public hearing. And then let's move on to item number 5, which is also the Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program waiver request, and this is an action discussion item. We've just heard from Mr. Souza. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this issue? Okay. Any board members who have comments? Mr. Buckman?
I was just going to make a motion.
Okay.
You
want to see something? Nope.
I move that we approve the submission of the waiver request by the Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program to allow the ROP to maintain a reserve greater than 15% through June 30, 2008.
Okay. It's been moved by Mrs. Dickinson and seconded by?
I'd like to second that
by
motion.
Mr. Buckman. Any other discussion from board members? All in favor?
Aye.
It carries 6-0.
Thank you.
Let's move on. You're welcome. Thank you for all that you guys do. And thanks, LA Unified. Let's move on to item number 6, the local education agency plan. And this was something that has been brought back to the board at the board's request. Dr. Matakovich.
Well, thank you, President Unger. It's a pleasure to come before you tonight and share our local education agency plan. It's at your request that we're doing this overview. And I wanted to start off the discussion or the presentation with a reminder in terms of what our school district is all about, what our mission is. And if I could, the mission of San Luis Coastal Unified School District is to educate students to become self-sufficient individuals who are capable of making contributions to society and managing the change in the culturally diverse world community. The district guarantees to provide the highest quality programs and services which will give all individuals the opportunity to realize their full intellectual, physical, creative, and to the development of this accountability system. To meet legislative requirements for state and federal funding programs, the California accountability system employs 4 major components. You're familiar with the consolidated application, which is the funding mechanism used to distribute categorical funds and is presented to the board twice a year, once in the spring and then again in January, confirming our funding. You also are familiar with the school-level school improvement planning process. These plans are brought before the board each year, and they are on the agenda tonight for your review and discussion after this item. They describe how individual schools will spend their portion of these state and federal funds. We also participate in a coordinated compliance review, commonly called a CCR. We do this every 4 years. There's a review team approved by the state that verifies our compliance requirements of each categorical program. And then last but not least, we have the Local Education Agency Plan, or LEA Plan, which is the component that we're going to discuss tonight. Our LEA Plan describes the educational services a district provides for all students. It's used as a guide to implement our federal and state-funded programs. This plan has a requirement of 5 goals that are adopted by the California State Board of Education. These goals are set and they include all students will reach high standards, at a minimum, attaining proficiency or better in reading and mathematics by 2014. A second goal is all limited English proficient students will become proficient in English and reach high academic standards, at a minimum, attaining proficiency or better in reading, language arts, and mathematics. By 2005-06, and we're past that date, but all students will be taught by highly qualified teachers. Fourth goal, all students will be educated in learning environments that are safe, drug-free, any input. We do this through our principals, our school site councils, and our district advisory committees. We review our district characteristics, our demographics, our socioeconomic status across the board. We analyze our student performance results by setting targets and monitoring their progress. We analyze our current educational practices and review our available resources. We also identify specific program plans and evaluate their effectiveness. We modify our plan annually, and we present it to you for approval in June of each year. So, I'd like to take a moment to address each of the goals. In addressing the first goal, our district has aligned our instructional materials, our professional development, our assessment practices with the California state standards. Sites have developed after-school programs and aligned auxiliary services to support students at risk. Program effectiveness is monitored through disaggregated data of both district and site-level performance. In our first goal, all students will reach high standards. We have been able to demonstrate district-wide a 65.2% achievement rate, which far exceeds the expectation or the goal set by the state of 23% in English language arts. In mathematics, our school district has rated at a 65.8% level with the achievement goal of 23.7%. Our district is doing a very good job with all students in terms of accomplishing the proficiency targets set by the state. Now, our strategic plan is one that allocates resources to our specific targets. And with complements to the plan has identified reading, at-risk students, special education students, and encouragement for after-school programs, and our ability to communicate with our parents in a more effective way through our student information system. We also have a very extensive professional development. Our results are a bit of a challenge here, and this is why it's a focus of our strategic plan. The target is for 48.7% of our English learner students to meet their annual progress goal in learning English, as measured by the CELT test. Our district is close to that achievement target at 47.3%. Now, this goal has to do with students achieving a level of proficiency each year as they are involved in our program. So we're close to the target, and this is an area that we are focused on. As far as our English learners demonstrating their English proficiency at the early, advanced, and advanced levels on the CELT, we are just a one-tenth point ahead of what the target is for the state of California, which is 27.2%. Our students, our English learners, were to demonstrate proficiency in reading, language arts on the content standards test. We fell shy in that area. The goal was 23%, and we achieved 16.5 5% in terms of recognized achievement in this area of reading language arts. In mathematics, we accomplished the state bar by 27.2% rating. The state goal was 23.7%. So we're doing a little bit better job in mathematics, but our focus is in the area of reading language arts. So in order to address this goal, we've done a number of things, as you can see in the plan. Our instructional program consists of English language development instruction, content standards instruction through the specially designed academic instruction in English. We provide primary language support and instruction through English learner specialists, ELD teachers, EL aides, classroom teachers authorized to instruct English learners, and you've authorized a English learner teacher on special assignment. We've also adopted state materials to support our English learners. We have a variety of assessment tools to monitor our English learner achievement, as well as we have a grant entitled the Community-Based English Tutoring Program, which provides our families with language instruction. We also are providing translation services for our families, primarily in Spanish. We have professional development opportunities that we're participating in. We recently had a number of staff attend Kate Kinsella's Vocabulary Development Strategies workshop provided by the county. And we know that this is an area that we have as a focus in our district. And you have provided us additional resources through the strategic plan by providing us additional EL specialists, more translation services. You've authorized sections at the secondary level in English language development instruction. We've provided a summer testing program for our English learners, as well as you provided Pacheco additional support to deliver their program. And we have a number of materials that we've been able to purchase in order to accelerate in this area. So on to goal three. All students will be taught by highly qualified teachers. Our results show that we're at 98% in terms of the classes taught by highly qualified teachers. That our teachers are receiving quality professional development is a target that we have for all of our staff. 100% of our paraprofessionals are qualified per the guidelines directed by the state. We continue to focus our attention on authorizing supplemental credentials for our teaching staff to support working with English learners. We also have provided professional development opportunities in standards-based instruction, in research-based strategies, including working as professional learning communities, looking at academic interventions, the use of assessment tools, and building academic vocabulary. Our strategic plan in the area of personnel, you focused by supporting us, our new teachers, by allowing us to hire a teacher on special assignment in the area of supporting beginning teachers, as well as we're doing background work on employer assistant housing, which is an important training for staff. We have science-based programs across the board, K-12, Project Alert, Second Steps, Steps to Respect, and Too Good for Drugs. We have decreased our students' use of tobacco products. We have implemented a comprehensive counseling and guidance standards-based program for all grades, K-12. We have a very effective school attendance review board that deals with our issues, our at-risk students, in terms of their attendance issues and drawing our community resources together to support them. We have a student's success team that's coordinated by staff at the site level in order to recognize issues that surface with individual students at the site level to ensure that they receive the support and the services necessary in order to be successful. So on to goal five. All students will graduate from high school in 2014. The data that we are presenting for you today is 2005-2006 data. We're to increase the percentage of students graduating from high school with a regular diploma. Our percentage is 85.3% with a state target of 82.9%, so we're above the state target in terms of graduating our students. What they,
Mary.
Yes?
Does the performance goal mean with a regular diploma? Or we just add, does the performance goal imply a regular diploma?
Yes, it does.
Oh, it does?
Yes.
Not certificates of completion?
Not certificates of completion. So students that have met the graduation requirements, yes. And then, if I may go on, we have a dropout rate, and the target is to decrease the percentage of students who have dropped out of school. Our rates in 05, 06 register that we have a 18.8% of our Hispanic students, or 67 students in that class, dropped out of school. African Americans, 16.3%, 7 students dropped out over the course of 4 years. And our white Caucasian students, 8.7% of our students, or 160 with our families to determine the services they need, but also to track these students. We have our AVID program in place at the elementary and secondary level now to support our students through high school. We've increased counseling services by reducing our counseling caseload and ensuring that parents and students have conferences annually to ensure that they have the support necessary to continue through school. And then we have a variety of academic interventions, after-school programs with transportation, so that we are able to support our students as they go through our system. Yes.
So we don't know definitively if those students have dropped out. We just know that we don't know where they went. Is that
absolutely
right? Okay, so the rate could be lower?
Could be lower in that they haven't reported data to us. They have to recognize a school program that they're in, meaning requesting records or CUME folders. And if we don't have that, then we have to report them as dropouts. It's very difficult. And there's a point in time when this data is collected, and that's October, the first week of October. So at that point in time, but the same characteristics are set across the state. So this is how they're defining our dropout. Okay. So also we're to increase our AP course enrollment by increasing the percentage of students who are enrolled in our AP courses. And we're proud to say that 672 kids participated in our AP classes, so we're recognizing a high enrollment in advanced placement courses. So to make further progress toward these goals, we need to realize our mission. We, with parent support, our counselors, our teachers, our administrators, work with our students to ensure that we are focusing on what we're about in terms of educating students to become self-sufficient individuals. This plan reflects our educational services. We appreciate the support the board has given us with this foundation document, and with the support of the strategic plan, its objectives, and its resources, we are able then to provide this support to our sites. And in our site school improvement plans, which will be shared in the next board item.
And to proficiency.
Well, and Mrs. Delskamp is here to help me if I misstate, but the estimate is 5 to 7 years for a child to become language proficient.
No, but what does the law say we have? Oh. That's my question.
What, Rita, if you could help.
Yeah.
Well, basically, it's just whatever time we have with them. So if an English, before that time, so if an English learner comes in the ninth grade as a level one student, they're expecting that by the time they graduate in 2014, or whoever graduates in 2014. So let's say a ninth grader came in several years before that, but now it's 2014 and everyone's supposed to be proficient. That means all English learners also.
So a new student moving from a foreign country that enters the school system, they're expected to be proficient when they enter.
Well, they usually wouldn't arrive in the 12th grade.
I know, but, I mean, as an extreme example, that could happen, right?
Sure, they could arrive in 11th grade and are expected to
and
be proficient.
Actually, I'm guessing that a 12th grader wouldn't be that much of a problem because 12th graders are exempt from the state testing. But is not the rule that they have a year to essentially acclimate to the English before they have to start taking the English language versions of the testing, which affects our proficiency scores?
Yes, that's true, except that I think we're talking about what the LEA plan says as far as graduating, and that performance goal number 5 says that by 2014 we're supposed to have all our students graduating.
The only thing I would add to that is that the standard by 2014 is that every student in America will be proficient at every grade level and instantly.
Mm-hmm. Imagine.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of a bird walk. I read yesterday, I believe, that NCLB is not expected to be reauthorized this year. Yeah. They're looking at next year for reauthorization of NCLB is. Yeah, I think that was in the, you might want to check, you're looking surprised, Mary, that was in the Los Angeles Times yesterday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dave, do you have more questions? And then Adrian?
Sorry. It's so mind-boggling to me. This report is like this fat that Dr. Mitakovich has to make because of this law. So I have to say that I resent the unrealistic pressure. I like Dr. Skoulis's, I see him standing back there, his quotations in his little newsletters. And there was one about the people who are saying something is impossible should get out of the way of the ones who are making it happen or something like that. And it seems like the school district is trying to make it happen even though it is impossible. But I think this is a very unfortunate bill, and even the people that are talking about the changes are not very helpful, like Nancy Pelosi's ideas and all. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, you know, I look at Dr. Valentine and Dr. Mitakovich, you know, and all these principals are putting this sincere, you know, concerted, gallant effort into helping all the kids become as proficient as possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
very important.
It's really, I don't know how to describe that. It's just so amazing and admirable to work that hard in the face of something that is bad legislation, essentially, if ultimately. So I don't know. You know, we are going to hit the canyon wall, but in the meantime, congratulations to everybody for flying well.
Spent a lot of time with this, and the first thing I want to say is just congratulations also, but I also want to just let everybody know if you want a real quick study of what's going on in the district and you really want to know some of the program things and some of the numbers and the special efforts that are being made, this one agenda item is just an incredible wealth of information. I had probably 14 blue sticky questions that I'm not going to ask tonight. I have just two that I'd like to ask, though, if I can. It's my understanding that we keep talking about how easy, you know, we're a good district, we can attract teachers, and on page 27 of my version of this, there's a small chart about teachers and hiring, and it just shows us it looks like we're having difficulty hiring ELD and SDI teachers, and I wondered if there was a reason for that, a solution for that. I, Looks like we're short about five teachers.
Yeah, and we continue to, but at this time we're not requiring it when we advertise for a position.
Okay. And then just lastly, must be page two of the CELD. In 1988, 1999, there were 401 students that were designated EL students, and in 06-07, there were 207 students. And it's just that kind of information that's in this document that I'm just finding amazing and good to know. So I just point that out to everybody.
Dave?
Yeah, another follow-up. At the beginning of the presentation, we talked about the goal to have 100% highly qualified teachers. Can you define, or how do we define highly qualified?
Rick?
It's actually defined in a couple different ways, but for the purpose of the LEA plan, it's under the NCLB Act and highly qualified. And it's determined by whether or not a teacher, first of all, has received their credential prior to 2002 or after 2002. There's two different criteria for what are termed new teachers, those who received their credential after 2002 and those who had them before. And it's basically a combination of subject matter competence and experience in the subject they're teaching. So to be highly qualified as a new teacher, they must have a major in the subject they're teaching or have passed a CSET exam. For a teacher who is a more veteran teacher, there are other alternative ways to have highly qualified status. We currently have, I think, four or five teachers in our school district who do not have NCLB highly qualified status, mostly in the special education arena. Because at the secondary level, they have to literally have a major in every subject they teach. Pretty impossible to get for special education. And we have a situation with American Sign Language as an example, a difficult area to find somebody with that actual college major, but yet have the ability to teach it. So we have a couple little problem areas. I think our percentage is closer to 99% than 98% right now, but it's still not 100. We're not quite there with NCLB.
I was curious, Dr. Matakovich, what does our district do if a student comes in from out of state with different testing standards and not the same progression that we would see if they were here in our district for a number of years? Is that at all an issue regarding the results being shown?
For them to be successful, how they would measure up, it's one child at a time. So I think what you would see at the classroom level are teachers with profiles of their individual students and knowing where they stand relative to the state assessments. But also when we get a new student who comes in, they also receive that background information so they can properly place them in the appropriate reading group or whatever. So
yeah, the reason I was asking that was also how adept we are, and I believe we are as a district, to identify each student's needs in each classroom, irrespective of their background, where they've been, what they're trying to achieve, and what the teachers and the administrators are seeing. I mean, the flexibility, because it almost sounds like everybody's got a number, and they're all marching towards a conclusion. But that doesn't happen in the classroom. Yeah. There are constant assessments regarding the students and the needs.
I just had two questions. Dr. Matakovich, it was on one of the last overlays that I wrote down standard-based guidance for all grades.
Yes.
Could you define that term for me, please?
Pardon me? Thank you. I think we had a presentation last year. Our K-12 guaranteed guidance program, we have standards at each grade level cluster, K-12 in the academic development area, in the career development area, and the personal social area. And we have a document that guides our work as counselors. So our K-6 counselors have definite expectations based on those national standards, as well as our middle and high school staff. So we took the national standards and have aligned our program to them.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And then just my second question, I don't know if it's a question or a comment, regarding the dropout rate. What I wrote here was we're graduating 85.3% of our students.
Yes.
With the objective or goal being 100%. So that's 14.7% that have dropped out or fallen, somehow leave education and go to work or mm-hmm. whatever it is that they're doing.
Okay.
Okay, at your convenience.
Sure.
Thank you.
And just I have a couple of questions myself. On page 21, we talk about one of the board's initiatives as being reorganizing the high school into smaller units. And I'm curious where we are with that one. If we could have a report on that at some point, I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, I think the report's a brief one. That was a, I think that was a carryover from an earlier board initiative. Dr. Ladd was here. We talked about reorganizing the high school. We went into the budget crisis. We pulled back on the the high school reconceptualization. Mm-hmm. We pulled back on that project during that time, and we've moved forward now through the strategic planning process.
Okay. So we are going to be continuing to talk about looking at reorganizing the high school. Is that what you're saying, or are we saying that's over with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're saying that that's over with. That okay. The strategic plan is the direction where the energy is going now.
All right. So, okay. And the last question I have also regards to the high school dropouts. I know we have a number of students that leave our programs and go into independent study, either at Atascadero or Templeton formerly. Could we get some numbers on that too, because I'd be curious about the number of students that are leaving our traditional high schools, including Pacific Beach, to go on to independent study?
That would be fine, and just for your information, they wouldn't be considered dropouts,
right,
because they
that.
Have a
yeah.
location.
Yeah, they would be considered going on, but I'd still interested in students that are leaving, not completing their education through San Luis Coastal. Any other questions for board members? Mrs. Dickinson?
On beliefs on page 22, number two, individuals are important. Number two, students should be allowed to progress at their optimum rate, which I think is contradictory to No Child Left Behind, really. And on the page 24, all statewide assessments, this is academic performance summary, all students participate in the appropriate programs in the statewide assessment system. Since I work with students with disabilities, one of my frustrations is that instead of them testing at their level to show what they've learned, they have to take this appropriate program seems to be grade level. So they have to take, I think that would be a huge improvement.
Any other questions from board members? Okay, let's move on then to item number 7, which is approval of K-12 school improvement plans for 2007-2008. Mrs. Dalkis-Camp.
Okay. Education code requires the Board of Education to annually approve school site plans. The attached summary of each site's goals is presented for the board's review tonight. Each school site council oversees the site planning process, and the team includes school staff, parents, and community representatives, and at the secondary level, it also can include students. School plans now incorporate the criteria of Board Policy 6190 that includes criteria such as the Academic Performance Index, API, Adequate Yearly Progress, AYP, External Evaluations, and Site-Based Areas of Emphasis. School site councils meet to ensure that their goals are monitored throughout the year, and the results are reported annually. School improvement plans are available at their respective school sites and at the Instructional Services Department. As part of our review tonight, we have incorporated brief presentations by three of our school principals: Doug Jennison, principal of Baywood Elementary, Steve Anderson, principal at Laguna Middle, and Pete Zotovich, principal at Morro Bay High, will provide you with an overview of their school plans. And then following these presentations, we welcome your input.
Thanks for the opportunity to share with you about what's going on at Baywood School. We have five major goals in our school improvement plan, and these were just recently revised by our school site council. We were hoping to make them more clear and concise. Our first goal is maximizing individual achievement for student wellness and success. We will work together to promote students' physical and social-emotional safety and to help students improve social relations and self-esteem. By June 2008, we will determine the success of these programs through staff, student, and parent surveys, report cards, discipline and counselor referrals, and by other student assessments. Now, under each goal, we have a list of steps that we take. And I've just highlighted the major ones that are under this particular goal. And these are multi-funded through some of them general fund, Title I, school improvement, and measurable by the end of the school year. And so for our primary grades, we will work together to help our kindergarten through second grade students improve in reading. And by June 2008, 80% of the students in each grade level, K-2, will be at or above grade level in reading as indicated by the DRA scores. Our teachers give those DRA assessments, their one-on-one assessments to the students at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year. So we'll have that information. And then in our upper grades, we will work together to help our third through sixth grade students improve in reading. By August 2008, when the STAR results are available, the CST results will show an increase in 3% in the number of students at each grade level who score at proficient or above. And some of the things that we fund under this goal are our Title I teacher and instructional aids for small group instruction, our after-school homework club, instructional materials such as Read Naturally, Sword of Success, Accelerated Reader, Enchanted Learning, and books for our library and classroom, before and after-school remedial groups. Our third goal addresses mathematics. And we also made these very specific and measurable in our different grade levels. We will work together to help our kindergarten through second grade students improve in mathematics. By June 2008, 80% of the students in grade level K-2 will be at or above grade level, as indicated by the end of the year report card. In our upper grades, we will work together to help our third through sixth grade students improve in mathematics. By August 2008, when the STAR results are available, the CST will show an increase of 3% in the number of students who score at proficient or above. And again, some of the things that we do to help meet this goal are fund a Title I teacher, instructional aids for small group instruction or after-school homework club, instructional materials such as Math Steps, Orchard, Corrective Math, Math Tools, Math Family Night, and after-school math enrichment sessions. Our fourth goal is creating a balanced curriculum for improving student achievement. And this says we will work together to ensure that all students receive a balanced curriculum in all subject areas. We'll support and promote programs and curriculum in the areas of science, history, social science, physical education, and visual and performing arts. We will determine the success of these programs through staff, student, parent surveys, and other specific curricular areas. And here's where we write steps to address the visual and performing arts program, such as our artists in residence, school choir, art legacy project, Clay Days, our Everyday Etudes program. All parents feel welcome and involved. We will support and promote programs that actively involve parents, and our PTA, school site council, parent education, school volunteers. We will determine the success of these programs through staff parent surveys, PTA and school site council agendas and minutes, parent volunteer sign-in sheets, and evaluation of our parent education sessions. We fund a volunteer coordinator to help facilitate all this. We have shared decision-making in our school site council and PTA and other committees that are put together. Parent education nights and family nights. All right, thank you.
I have a question. Doug, I have a quick question if I can, please. Can't get away so quickly. Question I had is, what's the dynamic at Baywood relative to the method in which students are placed either in school programs to assist or extracurricular activities after school between parent involvement, teacher assessment, and that mix?
Right. We use the STAR results, the CST results, for third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade students. And then we always have teacher judgment that's involved here, too. So even if if we feel like their scores were high but they're still struggling, or vice versa, they're real low and they're getting assistance, we can always use other means just by what's going on in the classroom. So it's multi-measures.
Do you have many parents who request
we do
services without
we do having a counselor? Yeah, we do. And sometimes they're right on and we want to help them, and sometimes we say, look at these scores, look how great they're doing, they really don't need to be in the homework club, congratulations, they're doing excellent. So it's a multi-measure, and it's a committee kind of working together to even design programs. We're in the middle right now of designing a program because we found some needs in certain grade levels, and we're looking at some monies to design this, and we've had parent input on that from our EL and our Title I parents. So,
okay, thanks. Yeah, thanks very much for all that information.
Thanks.
Wait.
Oh. Rita told me we're going to have questions at the last.
Oh. Do you want me to wait?
No.
It's easier right now, don't you think? It's more specific.
Yeah, good.
You have such a good voice, by the way. I've seen you in assemblies with your students,
you
do such a good job with your kids.
I look really
like,
good in
that they see, I mean, in terms of reliable and.
It's just one measure, again. And so we just selected one thing that we would have some hard data to look at. Right now, in their professional learning communities, that they're when they're meeting on a monthly basis, they're looking at designing some of their own tests and assessments at the different grade levels. So
theirs might be more valid and reliable.
Right.
In terms of showing progress.
And again, they're always using multiple measures.
Yeah.
But, you know, next year, if I'm presenting this, it may look different. We may not be using those results. We may be using some teacher-generated assessments.
Because I think that probably you are. And sometimes those don't show us what's really going on necessarily, you know.
So true.
It looks really great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh. Sorry, one more. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Good. I'm a fairly big fan of surveys, and when I first hit this, it was what I wrote on my note. Have you done those before? So you've developed trends and.
Yeah, we do that on a regular basis, and we do it online, and so we can get the results back really quickly. We do it at our open house where we have a lot of parents there. We've tried different things, you know, sending home the survey and hoping they come back and not getting a very great response. I don't know if Marilyn was on my school site council when we decided to do rewards if classes had, you know, a high percentage of parent return on the surveys. But now doing the online one where they can do it at open house and then even have a week to do it on at home helps to get a lot more participation. The one thing that we haven't done and we'd like to do this year is the student survey. That's with our upper grade especially. We want to elicit their feedback.
And are you using a survey that you're finding somewhere, or are you doing it yourself?
We develop it ourselves. Yeah, our school site council does.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Marilyn, no questions? Marilyn was on my school site council.
For many, many years. But no, I don't want to put you on the freckle. You did great. You may be seated.
Oh, thank you.
Next up for the Inquisition.
Great. Good evening. I'm Steve Anderson, principal at Laguna Middle School. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to share our goals and action steps for this year with you. We started this process of this plan back in May. It's a very extensive program to get put plan and our own Laguna department goals. Additions to this year plan that have not been in a previous plan is the AVID program in its first year this year, the homework club, math lunch support, new textbooks in science and social studies in Spanish for the Pacheco students who now attend Laguna. In our first goal, Goal A, we will provide opportunities and experiences for all students before, during, and after school that emphasize positive citizenship, academic and social skills, and a healthy lifestyle. Now, what we offer in here, some of our action steps are, we offer extended library hours and are purchasing high-interest, low-level books for our EL and special ed populations. After-school programs include math lab, Spanish lab, a homework club, our EL lab, and that's for EL students, including RFEPs. Our master schedule includes, within the school day, study skills, reading skills, and that's reading skills for regular ed students, special ed students, and EL students. AVID, an EL program, a special ed program, electives, PE, advisory, leadership, and again, social studies taught in Spanish. You'll hear that several times because that's a very important class. Student programs that are intended to enhance our curricular classrooms include student recognition, sweepstakes tickets, advisory activities, ASB activities, clubs, academic contests, Geography B, Poetry T reception, Battle of the Books, displays for art, home ec, industrial tech, computer portfolios, community service projects, Project Wisdom, which is read each day, covering character education, and Program X with the Parks and Recreation after school. On Goal B, we will use assessment results to direct our professional development to raise the academic performance of all students to the state standards. Some of our action steps here: our early release time on Wednesday is used to provide collaboration time and staff development 50-50. It's a nice mix and gives us a time to get those things done that we need to, plus additional staff development time. Our staff development plan includes STAR result discussions leading into actions. English and math departments are implementing the benchmark assessments and provided time to review those results. We'll see. We will communicate, and this is always an interesting one, we will communicate with all parents, Laguna staff, and students in an accurate, timely, and inclusive manner. A parent-student-staff survey in the spring will demonstrate that 75% of the parents, students, and staff were well-informed through the many avenues of our communication action steps. We chose 75%. I don't know why, but 75 seemed a good place to get a baseline to start with. At school communications, these include providing a master calendar and school planner of activities, management team, school site council, department chairs, collaboration time, and daily bulletins. For parents, we provide PTA, parent advisory, school site council, school safety advisory, a sports steering advisory, two newsletters a month, a website, back to school night, open house, parent education nights, three parent visitation days, ELAC for our EL parents. We provide Spanish communication during parent meetings and for meetings during the day, career day speakers, and Power School. Students receive activity information, program announcements, and upcoming activities through the daily bulletin, leadership class, ASB, student council, and the more general information through our student and parent handbook. Our fourth goal, Goal D. Holy cow. That's a lot of stuff up there. What you see up on the overhead are our goals in each of the areas of CST STAR assessments. And you will see that each one of those is a 5% increase. That's what we're looking for in each of the areas, with the exception of two areas. Okay? The areas that are the exception is the third one down, seventh grade algebra, 93% is what they scored, proficient or above, and by June we're looking at 94. Statistically, to try to raise 5% from a 93 to a 98 is pretty difficult, and even we recognize that could be a little bit above what we could do. So raising it 1% would be quite significant. If you go down further, eighth grade geometry was at 92% of proficient and above, and we're looking to go to 93%. Again, both of those are advanced courses, but we've been making great strides in those with our advanced students. We have a great caliber of kids at Laguna. Here I just... Social Studies Department has also acquired a new text this year, and they will be working with the publisher and collaborating on instructional strategies and study questions. The English department will be working on instructional strategies to reinforce writing and reading skills and will implement its first year of benchmark assessments. And last but not least, special education will be working on the increased articulation between general education and resource teachers and will attend special development opportunities for certificated and paraeducators, and mostly through SELPA, because they have some excellent workshops available for our staff and they enjoy going to those. Now, I'm not going to leave. No.
Any questions?
Okay, I'll leave.
Mr. Jettison, we have more questions. No, I'm just kidding. Mr. Zonovich?
Pete Zonovich, Morrilby High School. The organization of the high school is a little different since we're governed with WASC, the Western Association of Schools and Colleges, and we have to be accredited, and your accreditation can go anywhere from you don't get accredited all the way up to 6 years. As you know, this last year Morrilby High School received the highest accreditation, which was a 6-year with a no 3-year visit. And we're in the third year of our accreditation report, and what we tried to do in 2005 when we were accredited was we took the board goals, the school goals, our WASC goals, and melted it all into one set of goals. And if we were to put up all the goals that we have in that and all the things that we're going to be doing, it would go all the way around this room. And we tried that one time a few years ago, and it got to be too much back in about 1998-99. So each year we redo our goals. The stakeholders in this were our staff, our parents, our students, our community. Everybody was involved. Currently now, who manages it is every second meeting of the month, our management team, school site council, reviews our goals, reviews our SIP goals. They don't do them all. They usually just do one, see how we're doing with it. And at the end of the year, we write a report to you as to how we're doing. So this is our third year for goals, and we have five. And the first goal, as you can see, that I gave to you there is continue alignment of curriculum with state standards to ensure that all students will demonstrate and support the need for ongoing staff development to enhance and improve standards-based strategies, including differentiation of instruction. Performance gains expected. Students will meet state and national and NCLB statewide and subgroup growth targets annually, and we have. And this year they've gone up again, so we'll see how we do at the end. And by 2011, 80% of Morrilby High School's 10th and 11th grade students will score at or above proficient on state content-based tests. Percent proficient at least 4% a year until target is reached. And our ESLRS address, we have to do our expected school-wide learning. ESLRS stand for expected school-wide learning results, and they are critical thinkers, effective communicators, and responsible citizens. And those are our three ESLRS, and this first goal does address all three of those. Goal two.
No, hey Pete, it's probably yes. We have all of this here. Mm-hmm. It's probably okay if you don't read everything to
okay.
us. If you just maybe could highlight some of the
sure.
really great things that Morrilby High School is doing.
Well, what I didn't show you, maybe if you would put up, this might help. If you put up the very last slide I gave you, each goal has seven specific tasks for each goal. Task one is alignment of instruction with content standards. And that is very, very elaborate. And there could be as many as 10 or 15 steps. Task two, improvement of instructional strategies and materials. That could be quite extensive. Then we look at extended learning opportunities, staff development and professional collaboration, parent community involvement, auxiliary support services, and monitor program implementation and results. Each one of our five goals have those seven specific tasks that have multiple steps in each one. And so it's quite an extensive plan that we put together. So I'll go on to go back to goal two, just briefly. All students will demonstrate improved reading ability annually. Just something that strikes me right away from that. Each teacher is responsible for designing their reading program in their class after multiple in-services that they've been given. But our English staff is really good in their leisure reading program that they're all using Accelerated Reader. It's not a tool to teach reading. It's a tool for students to continue to read. You know, I have a student that's a senior at the high school, and he just finished his second Accelerated Reader book, and the students study that vocabulary for that particular time. So that's a goal now that most of our teachers are doing that we're working through. As I, as an administrator, go in and evaluate the teachers under my jurisdiction, I look for that on the board, and we talk about that before I go in and after I do go in. Goal three. Maintain, expand, or establish program offerings that will improve student achievement for students designated at risk. And our at-risk students are defined as EL students, socioeconomic disadvantaged, students achieving below proficient on California standards test, and students with specific needs and students at risk due to credit deficiency, attendance, or behavior issues. Morrilby High School for the last 8 months has been having ongoing conversations about a book called Whatever It Takes. We're working on trying to establish within our own resources at our school, what are we going to do with our students that won't do what we ask them to do, even though we know they can. And we've been having about four hours of our last professional development day was based on this particular premise of helping all students. We have our AVID program, even though it's not an at-risk program, it's in place and it's going very strong. And tomorrow we're taking about 95% of our AVID students and about another 20 students to CSU Monterey, UC Santa Cruz, and I'm just going to skip my mind now, but a private school all north of us. And they're going to spend the day looking at colleges, and we're trying to really get them excited about going to a college and coming back. So we have a full busload of students that are going off tomorrow with their counselors and their teachers to see college. We have some very special classes that we do in this with our students that are having reading difficulties, thanks to your help. We have some fabulous results with our reading program, with our two reading specialists that are helping. And we're doing quite a bit with our students in the California High School exit exam area for tutorial help. Goal four is all students will make appropriate choices through high school, improving their education and career planning. This is our first year that our career units are being put in place, and we're quite excited about that. And we have our staff involved, all of our staffs involved that are going to be teaching the units, and we have the units where they're going to be taught in each grade. And we've been spending quite a bit of time with that, and we think that that's going to be a very, very positive thing for Morrilby High School once we really get into this, starting as we go through the grades.
Doesn't Morrilby High School also require a job?
And go right to work for some of the big gaming companies if you wanted to do something like that. So he used her as his example of what he wanted to do, and so he's been having quite a few conversations with her. And so that was his job shadow, and he spent quite a bit of time with that. And so every one of our senior students is doing a job shadow into a profession that they'd like to go into. What's nice about our career units now is that it's starting from the freshman year and not just hitting the senior year. We've done bits and pieces throughout the years, but now we're really trying to do a concerted effort that the kids really see career options past high school. Goal five, which has given us nothing but fits for the last few years, is all students will be given the opportunity to enhance their high school experience by direct involvement in the school improvement process. We are trying to organize our students to where they can write a fifth school improvement goal on their own, and that they write this goal because they're really involved, and our only issue has been time to actually put this in place, and we have not done as good a job because we've been working on so many other plans and so many other things that we've been doing. So we're actively into that again for this third year, and if it doesn't go this year, we will consider potentially writing a new fifth goal that involves students someplace down the line. But we really want our kids to get involved with a process of writing an action plan and understanding their goals. When I talk to kids on a regular basis, they know our goals. They know the standards. Their teachers are very, very, very good at explaining where we're trying to take them as far as a great academic education. So this would be helpful.
I was going to say that this was one of the things that really jumped out at me was your goal number five.
Right.
Really, the student involvement in in the planning their own high school experience, and I congratulate you guys for doing that.
Well, that came out of reconceptualization, and we found that our female population was really jumping way ahead of our male population, who was kind of taking a back seat and just kind of, they could do it, but they really didn't want to work that hard. So the reconceptualization team, which had quite a few students in it, was trying to figure out a way of recapturing all of our students and to have them focus on some school goal that they could all do and that would bring the academics back to them as to why it was important. So that's what this goal is about, and that's what we're trying to emphasize. Okay.
Mr. Spadafore?
Yes, it's not a question for Pete, but thank you for the presentation. That was terrific. It was just a comment as a board member. One of the things that happens to board members that I've seen over the last couple of years is parents come up and talk to you no matter where you are, and they prepared all of these.
Yeah, thanks to everybody who was involved in putting the presentation together. I know Doug, Steve, and Pete presented to us tonight, but I think they're representative of the work that took place across the district to put the goals together and to present them to us. And I personally noticed that this year there was, at least for me as a board member, a big improvement in terms of how the goals were presented. I like the fact that they list a specific goal, the measurements associated with the goal, and in Doug's case, I thought it was really helpful to present sort of the funding behind addressing any of the specific targets or related with that goal. So. Anyway, great job, everybody, I think, for all of the schools, the PTAs, the site councils that were involved in this. Thank you.
I think it's totally amazing what you all are doing. In light of all this, so I just want to bring up a couple of kind of off outside the box ideas that we don't want to I think we should be alert to myths in all of our paradigms about education. Even I brought this up when I was a board member. It was not a popular thing to bring up. But the questioning whether self-sufficient individuals is actually anything that can happen on a planet, that everyone is so interconnected. And the idea of closing an achievement gap, the bright and the fast-paced students are exponentially increasing the gap all the time. So that's a myth that we're going to close an achievement gap. But we might think about, how does an individual close a gap between, what they are doing and what they're capable of doing, or a gap between, some kind of self-awareness, getting back to the full mission statement of all the areas of their life, closing the gap between how full their life can be and how limited it has become, or is. Some students don't have a capacity for many of the experiences that make life good, in my experience working with them. Empathy and things like that, they just don't have the capacity for it. And how we develop those things to make them full human beings in every sense of the word. But anyway, just to, as we congratulate ourselves and all, just to be alert to keep thinking about it all. I think it's important, but I congratulate you all.
And so I'd like to just say thank you also.
Well, I'm going to seem unappreciative if I don't say thank you as well. But it's all been said. These are great documents, and I know that it's not just lip service, because having served on the site council at Baywood School for 6 years, and also at Los Osos Middle School, I know that people are really making a concerted effort to work toward achieving these goals. And my hat's off to all of you, so my thanks as well.
And I'll just finish up by saying that these plans, I think, are designed mostly not just by school administrators, but these are plans that have community input, parent input, teacher input, and hopefully student input as well. And so I think they reflect where our elementary schools and our high schools and our junior high schools want to be going. And so on behalf of the board, good luck and in implementing these things. Okay.
Can
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, if you just...
I really like all of the principals in our district. I think you guys are great. And I want to say that Dr. Mitakovich, too, did such a phenomenal job. These are interrelated, this agenda item and that one. And thank you for all that hard work. It was good.
Great. And we know that you'd love to stay and watch the end of the school board meeting. We're planning on ending at about midnight tonight. But you probably have better things to do, like going home and being with your families. So thank you very much. And if you feel like you'd like to leave, we certainly will understand. We're going to take a 5-minute break right now. We have a quorum, and I'm going to wait till... Mrs. Holmes? We are, actually. We couldn't run the meeting without you, Mrs. Holmes. Well, you know. Yeah. Okay. You know, with the board's consent, I'd like to move on to the action consent agenda. Hold item number 8 until Mrs. Roger returns, and then. See if we can get through the action consent agenda and then perhaps the advanced agenda and board reports, and then come back to this unless she comes. So let's move on then to the action consent agenda. Let me know if you'd like to have something pulled. And I'm just going to say up front, I think we should pull item number 15. Item number 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 10, acceptance of donations. Pull. Number 11, disposition. 12, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 13, approval of purchase orders. 14, approval of warrants and payroll. And 15, action on claim of against the district, Sharon Waller. Item number 10, and who asked for item number 10?
We'll just do
approve
the others.
I'll make a motion to approve 9, 12, 13, 14.
Second. Thank you.
Yes, I second.
All in favor? Hi, Mrs. Holmes, did you catch who the second was?
I couldn't tell if it was
Mark
or Dave.
I think it was Dave first.
I'll sell it to David.
As a surplus item. Okay, so it carries 5-0 on items number 9, 12, 13, and 14. Item number 10, John?
Yeah, I just had a quick question on the vehicle that we're purchasing. Are we buying it and donating it? It says Ag Inc. / donation. It's on the purchase.
You're asking about.
That's on.
You're asking about not number 12, the FERS.
No.
You're asking about 12.
Yeah, I am on 12.
Okay.
I apologize.
Well, you know what? We approved item number 12.
Let it go. I'll ask the question offside.
Okay, so item number
10 is a mistake on my part.
Okay. Would you like to make a motion on item number 10?
I make a motion that we approve item 10.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded by
Dave.
Mr. Peter.
I would like to make a motion to approve item number 11.
Been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mr. Spadafore for item number 11. All in favor? Carries 5-0. And I just asked for item number 15 to be pulled, as we typically do on these items, an explanation that the recommendation is to reject the claim, not based on the merits of the claim necessarily, but on the fact that if we reject the claim, then it goes to our insurance carrier who goes ahead and handles it for the district. And so given that, I would move approval of item number 15.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Spadafore. All in favor? Aye. Carries 6-0. Let's move back then to item number 8, which is a discussion of the board retreat, planning for a board retreat on November 13th. Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, this was put on the agenda essentially as a placeholder. The board has scheduled a retreat on November 13th. Things that the board might want to provide input on regarding the retreat would be a starting time for that retreat, a location for that retreat, and if there are topics for discussion that you would like to see included on this, now would be an opportunity to provide that input as well. I'd start with the suggestion that we hold the retreat here in the district office campus, that dinner would be provided, and therefore a time frame which would include the dinner hour might be appropriate if the board so wished.
And we're looking for input on that, Mr. Peter.
I was just going to raise the question in general. Does it make sense to consider having the retreat after a new board member is appointed as opposed to doing it next week? Just the thought occurred to me that, you know, the timing of this and we have two meetings next week, the 13th, the 15th, another board member on the 20th. There's an expulsion hearing. There's a lot going on. And I just thought something you might want to consider. I can do either way, but.
Well, can I give you a thought on it while you're thinking? One thought about what you're saying is, I don't know how pressing this seems to everyone. To me, it doesn't seem too pressing, but we might want to all be on the same page and then welcome a new board member. And with some of the
agreement that the 13th is the best meeting that we can have, recognizing that it's an open meeting. And that hopefully anybody who has applied for the board position is reading the agendas and looking at the meetings upcoming. Mrs. Roger.
So we've set this for the 13th, and that is a Wednesday? It's a Tuesday. Okay. Okay.
It's a Tuesday with the interviews for the applicants regarding Dave's position to be on Thursday.
Well, nobody ever said this was going to be easy. We do have two really loaded weeks. But I think it's important that we go forward with the retreat and work on some areas of boardsmanship. And then we can welcome a new board member after the retreat. To me, it makes sense to go that way.
I was going to agree also. And besides, the new board member will also be able to make the trip to San Diego, which will provide opportunities to have multiple discussions, maybe more than they ever anticipated.
So I think we're in agreement then that the 13th is the date. Okay. Okay. And the time, Dr. Valentine, were we talking about 6 p.m. or a little earlier? I can't remember.
Well, I think if we include dinner as part of the meeting, I don't know whether you want to contemplate an earlier start. We don't have a maximum time limit, but I would think 9 o'clock-ish would be as far as we would want to go. Yeah, and that's what
5:30? Would you be okay with 5:30, Mrs. Dickinson? John? Okay, 5:30? 5:30 it is. It's just.
And what about the location?
Mrs. Dickinson? We're open for suggestions. What are you thinking?
You guys are always the ones to figure out restaurants, but it'd be fun to have it somewhere where the chairs are a little more comfortable, don't you think?
No.
Mark's saying no.
I'm feeling in this, you have, yeah.
Then they do that, yeah. And, yeah. So it's happened before, and there hasn't been any particular issues in the past where people were offended or felt left out.
Everybody, Mark, are you okay with dinner? Okay, all right. Okay. Well, I think I understand what you're saying, Mark. I think if we're going to start at 5:30, I know I have to eat dinner. I can't last without dinner. So I would appreciate dinner if we could do that.
We'll keep it simple.
Okay.
If we held it here, it would probably be in the B3 room, which is next to the superintendent's office.
Did you want to? Then we have contracted with Wendy Went to facilitate the meeting. Can't recall if Wendy's going to be contacting other board members or not. Do you recall what we talked about? Yeah, I think Wendy will be talking to you, all getting ideas.
Was that your understanding?
About what?
Was that your understanding?
I can't recall. Yeah, and certainly if you have things that you'd like to share with Wendy, Dr. Valentine will give you Wendy's email address or her phone number. You can contact Wendy directly too.
I think it would be by email. Wendy contacts the board, it'd be by email.
Right. Well, and it is an open meeting, so. And other things that we need to think about. Marilyn, is there anything else that I'm forgetting? That I haven't covered? Is anything else that anybody would like to add right now?
Just want everybody to feel comfortable that they had an opportunity to contribute to the structure and the content of the meeting. That it's really a placeholder just to make sure.
Is everybody feeling that way? Absolutely, of course.
Dave is asking me over here, do we really need this meeting? Pardon me for speaking. Are there people who have specific things? Marilyn seems to. Specific questions that you have for an agenda?
Yes.
Okay.
It's fair to say.
Just so we have someone with an idea.
For us to get together before CSBA and start the new year.
Okay.
Other questions or suggestions? Okay.
What is on the agenda then for that evening?
The plan is that Wendy has some ideas for some starting places. John and I, as president and clerk, in our meeting with Ed last Thursday, had some thoughts about what we considered the interests of the board in the discussions. And so Wendy took those, and I think that she has an interest in seeing what other people have to say as well as what might be outcomes or areas of discussion that we want to have in terms of boardsmanship and board policy. Well, not board policy, I'm sorry, but our boardsmanship, those kinds of things. Okay. So I believe that we were able to capture what the board felt, but again, I don't want anybody to feel like they should not be able to contact Wendy directly. Okay, Dr. Valentine, do you have your light on?
Yeah, I think my sense from the conversation was it was an opportunity for the board to air ideas regarding when the board operates as a board, when the board operates as an individual, what are the implications of those two kinds of things that board members find themselves in. I think focusing on the topic of best ways to speak as a board, not in unity of opinion, but to recognize that at some point in time the board is speaking in unity, and sometimes the board is speaking in terms of simply separate opinions that come forward, and how do we separate the difference between the two, because some have expressed some confusion about whether we are expressing as individuals or expressing as a board and so forth. Those are the kinds of things that that I think came up in our conversation.
And I've just got to say that I'm really excited about the opportunity for us to get together again and have Wendy as a mediator, to a facilitator. Two things. First is that I was able to attend the CTA, the SLCTA meeting last week, where they discussed the PE waiver and exemptions that was held at Laguna Middle School. And I wanted to thank SLCTA for inviting me. It was a very interesting meeting. And then I just wanted to announce that I had a great honor, I consider it a great honor, bestowed upon me last week. I was asked by the president of the California School Board Association to be the chair of the 2008 program committee for the annual convention. So I'll be looking forward to that challenge next year. Is there anything else? Okay. Seeing nothing, I guess we can adjourn. Thank you very much.